The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Man, it doesn't show signs.
So excited.
I know. This is your dream come true.
Yes.
Weather-wise.
Yes. I love it when it's 90 degrees in the summer and everybody, it's too hot. I love it when it snows in the winter. It's too snowy. I like this a lot. So, you know what? Nick Allard, our buddy over at Cairo 7. I got to touch base with that man right now.
The Big Lead. Top story.
As you know, I talked about this yesterday. I heard Ursula say that as bad as the snow was this week, it could get even worse what is coming. And I said, no, as great as the snow was this week, it could get even better. I refuse to demonize snow. I love this. Nick Allard is meteorologist at Cairo 7 News. Hey, Nick, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. I'm glad to hear a positive spin on this.
Why do people, because when it's 85, 90 degrees, I hear people demonize that it's too hot. Sure. I love 90-degree weather. And then when we get snow, I hear people demonize. And I don't understand why people decide that extremes are horrible. I love them.
I don't know about the extreme part, but I can tell you this much. Day one in my house for a snow day was a magical experience. I mean, I was at work, but my family had a magical experience. Day two was, good Lord, what are we going to do? You know, so maybe that's part of it. The first day it's super hot. You're like, oh, let's get outside. Second day, you're like, the fan's not enough. Maybe that's it. Okay. I don't know.
I just love it. Okay, so, but I know I get all these angry emails from listeners when I say I love it. I can't win, Nick. That's the bottom line. The one thing I try to be cheery about on my show, and I get hammered for that.
Just stay consistent. Just you do you.
Okay.
You do you.
Okay, so how giddy and excited am I going to get in the next 24, 48 hours?
I think pretty excited.
Okay.
You know, oftentimes, the computer models are kind of like, oh, yeah, it could be snowy in Chehalis. It could be snowy in Bellingham. Here, it's like it could be snowy all over. The one thing I'll say is, like last storm, this will sort of work in bands, and so you all have a chance, everybody does, with the cold air in place, to see snow, and I think a lot of us will start to see it, say, in Seattle or even Snohomish County late morning into midday. So by Seattle tomorrow, probably between like 1 to, you know, 3-ish, we could see some snow pushing in, and it will stick around. I mean, you'll have heavier bands at times, and you'll have some pockets where it's a little bit lighter, and it should get heavier as Friday goes on into Friday night into early Saturday morning. And we've been going with a total in that, you know, 3 to 6, 4 to 8 inch range for a lot of places, with the potential, like we saw the other day, I guess that was Monday. Wow, it feels like a very long
week. Yeah, it does, yeah.
With the potential to see some places closer to a foot, because there could be some isolated spots with some convergence zone activity. There could be some spots where a band just sits there a little longer compared to what we originally thought. But the bottom line is, I think everybody's going to see some snow from this.
And then I heard you, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, say, and then another wave Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I mean, we're going to get that too?
It looks, the past couple model runs, especially the European model, have put a lot of snow over the area. But the UW model, which I'm leaning more towards, has some, but most of it heading south of us. So right now, most of my attention's on this weekend, but I have noticed that it's backed off on the lot between Monday and Tuesday. That could still change a little bit. I'm still going to keep a chance for snow in there, but it doesn't look as widespread as what we originally thought.
Okay, and then the other question, because there's only one thing that could ruin this for me, Nick.
Okay.
And that's if the power goes out, which is more likely if there are high winds.
Yes.
And I heard that particularly up in Whatcom County, but even down here in Snohomish King, that we could get sucked there, too.
So the other day, Monday again, when this happened, we had 58, 60, 70-plus mile-an-hour gusts for parts of Whatcom County. And I think you have that potential again, because it looks like it could be just as strong. And I remember being on the air. We did, I don't even know what, 9 hours of continuous stuff, I think. And I'd maybe say an hour six, we were getting gusts in Seattle in the 40-plus range. I think 40-plus is more likely for most of us. But I do think Western Skagit, San Juan County, western Whatcom County could all see gusts in that strong range again. And we'll more than likely have a high wind warning for a good part of the day later Friday into Saturday, while the rest of us would probably be at wind advisory levels or lower. So it will be windy, but I don't see it as an area-wide wind event.
Okay, because that's the one thing.
Yes.
If it's just snowing out, and I'm by the fireplace. My wife and I are watching The Americans on Amazon Prime.
Ooh, what season are you in?
We just watched episode one last night.
Shut up.
Of the first season.
Dude, I would love to come. That's one of my all-time favorite shows.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
I envy you. It's like somebody saying they're just going to sit down and watch Breaking Bad for the first time.
I texted my former producer, Jake, who's a screenwriter now, because I thought of him because I thought the writing was so great. And he said, oh, man. He said exactly what you said. He said, I would love to watch episode one again and not know what's coming.
I actually did recently watch episode one again. But I'm a nerd, though. I mean, I've seen The Avengers 68 times. It doesn't matter.
Okay, but my point is...
yeah, sorry. Back to the point.
If I could just watch that by the fireplace with snow falling outside, I'm 100 on the happiness scale. If the power goes out now.
Different story.
I'm a zero on the happiness scale.
I agree. I have a feeling, you know, most of us won't have that issue. You can never count on a limb coming down, or you can never really forecast that part of it. Because, you know, some of these trees still have some snow. We had some really good melting, thankfully. But, you know, some places kept snow, some places kept ice. And so that sort of thing, it's just out of our hands. But I don't think wind at this point would be an area-wide issue. But, you know, there is always that potential, especially north, which is a problem because they're going to be the coldest. But I don't think most of us will have that issue.
Okay, so your forecasts are snow is a certainty.
Yeah.
Wind is meh. And my Ooh. Wife and I are going to love the rest of The Americans.
Oh, I'm so happy you get to watch that.
Okay.
Yes.
All
that
right.
And did you know, by the way, this is a complete side note. Did you know that I went up in the Blue Angels this year? I am so happy right now that I got a topic about The Americans and I got to bring up the Blue Angels. And scene.
Nick Allard is with Cairo 7 News. Nick, it's always good to talk with you.
Don't worry, I appreciate it.
All right, thank you, man.
See ya.
There goes Nick Allard. So.
There's someone who wasn't laughing about that Blue Angels joke.
It's not funny.
I know.
I'm
he doesn't
not
realize
those,
how much of a sore spot it is.
I'm not like those radio sports hosts who laugh at everything. If something's not funny, Ursula.
I know.
Daddy, don't laugh.
So true.
Oh, man. Okay, next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
And I do want to talk very seriously about the one aspect of this weather that makes me heartsick. And I was driving home yesterday afternoon after the show, still snow everywhere. And I'm going up right by the U District, up I-5 North. And on the east side of the freeway, I looked up and saw more of those tents and tarps and people living underneath it. And I'm heartsick about the people who are out in these kinds of conditions. And I thought, and I spent the entire rest of my drive thinking, what in God's name should we be doing as a community? And this frustrates me so much because the conclusion that I've reached, not just, you know, as I was trying to rethink it yesterday, but as I've thought about this over the years, the reason the homelessness issue is so incredibly frustrating is because it is unsolvable. Now, politicians won't tell you that because they want the money. They want to spend more than $1 billion a year. They want us, or $100 million, billion over 10 years. We spend $100,000 a year per homeless person around here. More than $100 million a year for the 13,000 homeless. We could spend $1 billion a year instead of $100 million. We could spend $10 billion. But the fact of the matter is that there are navigation teams out there and they offer a bed, they offer treatment, they offer mental health counseling, And the vast majority of the people who are out on the streets do not want any services. This has become their lifestyle of choice. And there is only one solution if we truly wanted to help their lives. And that would be involuntary commitment. That we, because there are so many mentally ill people out on the streets too. New York City did that with great success during the Giuliani administration. But the ACLU came swooping in and said, nope, you can't help these people against their will. And that's what makes this so unfathomably sad, is that there's no amount of money that's going to fix this. The only things that we can do is lessen the moth-like attractiveness of our region. We have to get away from the drug policies that have attracted the drug vagrants from around the country to our region. And yes, that means that it would just be the whack-a-mole thing, and the people who are ending up here would be elsewhere in the country. But we've got to stop attracting with legalization of drugs, with the lack of policing. There is de-policing among Seattle police. There also aren't enough cops out there on the streets, as we'll talk with Cairo 7 Lindsay Sheldon about in just a few minutes here. But we cannot solve this problem without involuntary commitment. And the ACLU won't allow involuntary commitment. And so this is fundamentally an insolvable problem. So what do we do as a region? Well, like I said, we've got to stop attracting so many homeless. John Stossel has a great piece up at Reason.com about Seattle and San Francisco are practically indistinguishable politically. And he did a story about how San Francisco's politics have desperately hurt the homelessness crisis in that city.
A mess out here.
Where is the poorest, dirtiest, most depressing slum in the world? In Haiti? India? Africa? Is that what this is?
No. I'm in America. One of the richest parts of America, highest rents in all of America. This is San Francisco today. Encampments of street people everywhere.
Some pitch tents, planning to stay a long time. Some have mental problems.
Vampires are real and I'm paranoid as all hell.
Other street people complain about them.
They run around and they shout at themselves. They make it bad for people like us that hang out with a sign.
Hey, bitch, stick a camera up your head.
Some people shoot up in plain sight.
It's nasty seeing somebody actually shoot up drugs, like right there. The police don't do anything about it. They'll get somebody for drinking a beer, but they'll walk right past people using needles.
And that's what's happening in Seattle. Cops walk right past people using needles because the prosecutor has said, we won't prosecute anybody who's using drugs in front of us. And like Seattle, Stossel says San Francisco offers the homeless all kinds of resources.
San Francisco is generous. It offers street people food stamps, free shelter, train tickets, and $70 a month in cash.
I don't use any resources, but they're always offering resources. San Francisco is just a good place to hang out.
But because of the politics of San Francisco, like Seattle, this developer says that they'd like to come up with more affordable housing for the homeless, but they make it so expensive.
Let's get them to the point where they have to make a decision between jail and rehab. And there's a way we can do that. Other cities do it, but for some reason, San Francisco doesn't have the political will to.
Okay, and that's where we are. That's exactly where we are. That we must start prosecuting these crimes of open drug use. We have to start enforcing our drug laws, and we have to start saying jail or rehab. And we'll get them off the streets. You know, most of those people in tents and under the tarps have prosecutable crimes if our prosecutor hadn't said that we're going to legalize drugs. In fact, I need to get Satterberg back on the show, because when he first said that we're legalizing drugs, he said this will help things. And I always hear that from politicians, that they're doing things that'll help, and then things stay just as desperately bad, and nobody challenges them, except for me. You told us this was going to help, and things are worse than ever, because we are attracting drug vagrants from all around the country. And as we've pointed out so many times, a lot of them are raping our women around here, attempted sexual assaults. So many of these have been people who have migrated here from other states because of our lax policies. And so I'm frustrated. I left a message for a psychiatrist, a friend of mine, about what would it take to involuntarily commit people. Because the jail option, we do not have the political will for that. And so as I look around, I realize that our city council, led by Kashama Sawant, would rather let these drug encampments where little girls are getting raped so their pimps can make enough money to buy their next fix. These drug encampments and little girls getting raped are acceptable. People dying in the elements is acceptable because they don't have the political will to do what is right and necessary, because it doesn't feel good to them. They would rather have these poor, desperate people under tarps as the snow comes down tomorrow than to have the political will to say, hey, we'll get you warm in a jail cell or you will go to rehab. But there is no option to stay out on the streets. I don't see that happening anytime soon. And so, as long as we have the lack of spine politically that we currently have had for years and years and continue to have around here, this is an unsolvable problem, and that is the sad truth. And when the politicians say, no, just give us more tax money, they are lying to you. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Okay, another huge problem. There is a crisis of not enough cops on the streets. Cairo 7's Lindsay Sheldon is going to join me right after Ursula checks the news as we get rolling here on the Dory Monson Show. We've talked a lot about how rampant the crime is around the city. Seattle, the number one major city in the country for property crime. Home break-ins, car prowls. And it's being fueled by the drug crisis around here. People will do anything to steal, to get their next fix. And we just don't have enough cops out there to handle what's happening on the streets. And my colleague Jason Rantz has covered that quite a bit at My Northwest. And so has Lindsay Sheldon at Cairo 7 News, who had a piece last night about just what a crisis level it's at for staffing for Seattle Police. Lindsay, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Dory.
How bad is it for the Seattle cops?
Well, speaking with the union, I mean, they're saying, like you said, it is such a crisis that now we have this training that's happening that's bringing detectives back into patrol training for possibly being deployed out on the streets if needed. You know, there's debate over when that could possibly happen or if that could even happen at all, but this patrol refresher is happening for these detectives that normally work on cases.
And so I want to make sure I understand this. I assume that most detectives were patrol cops, but it was so long ago, that's why they need to be retrained as patrol cops before they go back out on the streets?
Exactly. So, you know, some of these people haven't worked on patrol for years, even in some cases, decades, right? So they're used to doing follow-up investigations and interviews, things on homicide, robbery, home burglary, things like that. And so to go back out on patrol, there's a lot of things that have changed. Yeah, I mean, you know, body cameras being worn now,
yeah.
The use of force, all the different protocols under the consent decree. A lot has changed, right?
And Lindsay talked with Rich O'Neill, the former Seattle police sergeant and current director of the Guild. And he says putting detectives back out on the street is not the solution.
It is a Band-Aid at best. You know, an analogy I used was, you know, you can't move the furniture around in the living room and think you have more furniture.
And he also said that the need for more cops is an absolute crisis.
We are incredibly understaffed, and it is a crisis.
And Lindsay, I've talked about this a lot. Seattle is almost the identical population in size as Boston. Our city budget is almost exactly double that of Boston's. We spend twice as much, and yet Boston has twice as many cops on the street as Seattle does. I mean, that makes no sense. That shows such a lack of prioritization for police here in Seattle.
Well, in talking to Rich O'Neill, who's a former Seattle police sergeant, he's the current director of labor and media relations over there. I mean, he was not mincing words either, Dory. He pointed exactly to that. He talked about Boston. He said, you know, they have 1,800, 1,900, I think he said, in terms of police officers. We're around the 1,200, 1,300, he said. And he would really like us to get closer to that. I mean, he's thinking 1,500 is where it would be, you know, most prudent. So he's kind of thinking around the same lines as you are.
So, I mean, given that we have the worst property crime of any of the top 20 population cities in the country, is there just no desire for prioritization from the mayor and the city council? I mean, who are they pointing to as the source of this problem?
You know, speaking to O'Neill, he's talking about just the support that police officers get within the city when it comes to high profile incidents. He would like to see some sort of campaign that actually goes out in a PR campaign that supports officers and says, hey, look, this is a great career. This is something that these young people in this booming economy who have a lot of options might want to consider. Because he talked about, you know, back when he was taking the test, there were so many people who wanted to be police officers. And now in this atmosphere, he says, there's just not that desire. And then, you know, kind of fold into that all the officers who are eligible to retire right now. You know, it's getting to that point where, you know, even the mayor has come forward and said, we need to offer these bonuses potentially to get some of these officers from other departments,
yeah,
other police departments. In
well, and it's just, it's sickening to me because when we have a city council member, Shama Sawant, who calls police officers who are exonerated in a shooting, when she calls them murderers, and she's getting sued for that now, you know, that's the kind of atmosphere that doesn't exactly make it a desirable job. And then the other point that you brought up in your story, so if they move all these detectives back on to patrol, all the caseload that those detectives have been working, that's going to suffer, and Rich O'Neill talked about that, too.
Our detectives all carry very heavy caseloads, and those reports will pile up, and that will lead to many frustrated community members who want to know, well, what happened to my burglary?
And so, you know, are we near any kind of a tipping point here, Lindsay, where the crime is going to become so great that our politicians are going to have to just shift their prioritization?
Well, you know, I went to SPD and I asked, how close are we to this even happening, right? Because you see a patrol refresher, you see a list of detectives, Dory, of, you know, homicide and robbery and burglary all going back into this training. The union thinks it's going to happen in some way or another, whether it's, you know, now these officers are available for filling in patrol shifts if they want, if a volunteer basis. They don't want to see it go to the point where they're reassigned on different shifts. I talked to SPD's Sean Whitcomb. He says they are nowhere near that. There are no plans to do it at this time, but retraining these officers is in case the need arises to backfill patrol to come up with more staffing.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, they just absolutely need more cops out there any way they can get them. You can see all of Lindsay's story. It's up at Cairo7.com right now. Good stuff as always, Lindsay. I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Dory.
Lindsay Sheldon, Cairo 7 News. Check her story up at Cairo7.com. And also, I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can text us. It's the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. It's interesting. CNN, you know, I always have CNN and Fox News on in the studio, and CNN has just been nonstop Trump hatred all day today. And then I see there's only one polling outfit that does daily presidential tracking. It's a 3-day rolling average, so it includes one day after the State of the Union. And Rasmussen has Trump's approval at 49%. And you just wouldn't have any idea that that's a possibility if you just got mainstream legacy media as your source of news. And I've told you that I care about two things from the presidency: national security and the economy. I don't care about anything else. I think the economy's doing really well. You know, January jobs number blew out all expectations. Personal income is up in all 50 states. And Washington's doing really well. You know, not having an income tax is very helpful. And it's bizarre that we have so, I mean, the Democrat Party in Washington state, excuse me, is held, I choke saying those words. They are determined to get an income tax. That's their holy grail. Even though our state does pretty well economically without an income tax, because we don't have an income tax. I bring all of this up because we have, especially in Seattle and Olympia, we have a lot of socialists. Now, they might not call themselves socialists, but Seattle City Council is predominantly socialist Marxist. And the city council members who have said that they're not going to run for re-election, the members of Sawant's party have said they're going to run and try to get more avowed socialists on the Seattle City Council, which will just choke the city. Nationally, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she rolled out her Green New Deal this morning. She says that Jay Inslee is one of the people who have signed on to this. And I am telling you, I read the entire thing. It's about a 7-8-page document. If my middle school students, when my girls were younger, if they had written something like this in middle school, I would have felt like my wife and I had failed our kids. Because a reasonably average intelligence middle schooler could not write something this stupid. Now, maybe a brainwashed third or fourth grader. That's kind of the level that I would put this on. Let me share with you some of the things that apparently Jay Inslee has signed on to as part of the let's have socialism take over America, the Green New Deal. One of the things that they plan to do is to upgrade or replace every building in the United States for state-of-the-art energy efficiency. Every building, a farmer's barn in Iowa, a little shack in Appalachia. They are going to upgrade or replace every building in the country. Now, as I said, a middle schooler wouldn't suggest anything that stupid. But that's what socialism is all about. Just throwing out insanity. Oh, but I'm not done. They would guarantee economic security. I'm going to read this to you. You're not going to believe this. This is verbatim. They would guarantee economic security for all who are unable or unwilling to work. I don't know that I ever thought I would see the day where we would be proposing in the United States Congress guaranteed security for people who are healthy, able, and simply unwilling to work. But of course, yeah, and that's somebody asked me. I read this a couple of days ago. Someone said, if socialism doesn't work, who supports it? And the answer is people who don't want to work. Okay, so economic security for all who are unable or unwilling to work. They also have months of planning, apparently. They released this document. Americans love a challenge. This is our moonshot. When JFK said we'd go to the, by the end of the decade, they just left out the word. I don't. One person on Twitter said they didn't know if they should put moon or soundstage in. So they just left out words in this. How about this one? We set a goal to get to net zero rather than zero emissions in 10 years because we aren't sure that we'll be able to fully get rid of farting cows and airplanes that fast. Their words in the Ocasio-Cortez, Jay Inslee document. That they pledge that even if cows continue to fart and airplanes continue to fly, they will come up with ways to offset those emissions. And I'm not sure how we're going to eventually get to a place where airplanes cannot fly. And it's interesting that Jay Inslee is listed as one of the supporters of this document, given that he has been flying all around the country running for president in 2020, burning up all the carbon fuel that goes with it. And so that's the Green New Deal. It is, look, the stated goal of Sawant's party is to tear down the foundation of capitalism, to not have any cops until they can get rid of our current form of economy. And then once the anarchy starts to take over, then they would rebuild a socialist Seattle and they would have a police force that fits the mold of the Marxists. And it's not socialism. They are avowed Marxists. And they would have a Marxist police force that would then run the city. And that is the goal here of all this socialism talk. It is to destroy capitalism, to fundamentally change the strengths on which our country was built. And all of this is coming into, and the media is complicit in all of this crap. Because if they reported, the newspapers, the TV station, if they reported that personal income is up in every state in the country, unemployment, record lows for minorities, for women, for, I mean, full employment in the country, January jobs number, even with the government shutdown, blew out all expectations. If there was just some level of balance in covering how the country's doing, the socialists wouldn't have the toehold that they've gotten. The media's to shame. Best 15 next.